Hey, Scary. Welcome. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. We've got two terrific hours of programming for you. I hope you'll stay tuned for the entire program. Couldn't pick a better topic for the first hour, the current financial debacle going on in the country. We're going to talk about some of the things that you don't get when you turn on the business news. The corporate news channels, the reporting that they give you when you pick up your morning newspaper and they tell you about all these things. As they always do, they leave out the most important parts of what they need to tell you. Well, my guest in the first hour is Danny Schechter, and Danny has written an important new book called Plunder. Plunder is what the story is, and Danny's got the book on it. Danny was on the program a few weeks back. He is a longtime author, a media analyst, activist, and critic. He's an independent filmmaker, a TV producer. He's been on this for so long in so many important ways. He's called the News Dissector. He's got a website that you can go to, you can sign up, you can get daily information Danny will send you. It's called mediachannel.org. It just covers all the stuff that we're going to talk about today, that you're reading about in the news, but you'll get the real stuff. You'll find out what really is going on, not the malarkey that the news media features. Danny, are you on?
I'm with you, Steve.
Oh, terrific. I'm not sure where you are, but we got you on your cell phone, right?
I'm actually waiting, believe it or not, listen to this. I'm waiting for a bus. I just had a screening of my film In Debt We Trust to an organization of senior activists. I went across the street to get on the bus because I'm heading down to Wall Street to meet Jesse Jackson at 1:30. He's announcing a response to all this, some sort of activist response, and he invited me to come. So this just happened yesterday, so I'm on my way down there. So it seems to me we always meet while I'm on a bus somewhere, but I hope I'll be able to respond okay and that everybody can hear me.
Oh, I can hear you. You're coming a little weak, but if you keep speaking loudly the way you're doing now, I think we should be okay.
Okay, great.
Oh, well, Danny, in about a minute we're going to take a break, and we want to talk about your terrific book, Plunder, and the subtitle is Investigating Our Economic Calamity and the Subprime Scandal, and you call it, accurately, a subcrime scandal. The crime of the century. It really is the crime of the century.
It's amazing. My book came out, and then Lehman Brothers went down. I have to claim credit for it. But this is something that a lot of people have been watching closely, but often, it's shrouded in so much detail and confusing language that it's hard for people to cut through to the essentials of what's really going on today. And I hope we can get into that.
We'll get into it in plain language, just the way the information that you put out in your book, which you take a complicated subject in your book, and you make it so easily understandable. People need to read your book, Danny. I mean, they can read The Economist and what they have to say, but if they read your book, all they have to remember is Plunder. They can find it on Amazon.
Yeah, it's at Amazon.com and other online bookstores, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they really want to know what this thing is all about, read your book. You literally follow this thing daily as it progressed over many, many months. And you were a voice in the wilderness talking about this. You couldn't get the media to chime in and explain that we really have a terrible burgeoning crisis until it finally exploded and then they woke up. Danny, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into it.
Okay.
And I'll read you some.
I was a hero, now I'm a hero.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Danny Schechter. Let me just say that the program is really a product of globalresearch.ca. And I've said it many times. I'll keep saying it. I hear static. Are we okay? Danny, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm right here with
you. Okay. Well, I had problems last week where I got cut off a few times, but I just want to tell people that your site's obviously DannyMediaChannel.org and GlobalResearch.ca that just covers a whole range of topics, key important topics. People need to discover it, go there, discover things, see what are the important issues being discussed. And just wonderful people, including Danny's articles on the site.
Yeah, I really appreciate Global Research's work and, you know, being ahead of the pack all the time with insightful, you know, articles and perspectives that you just don't see anywhere else. I think it's really valuable.
Oh,
Media channels are really focusing on the media role in all this, which is often rather crucial and rather missing. You know, in terms of explaining what's happening. You know, there's breaking news, but there isn't breaking explanation.
Oh, you bet your life. They leave out the whys. They give you the headlines they want. They explain nothing. People have no idea what's going on. There's a couple of Michael Hudson articles on Global Research, Danny. I just pulled up the latest one that my co-host, Michelle Chosedowski, posted today. There's too much in it to go over, but a couple of things that you'll love and listeners will too. He talks about the $700 billion junk mortgage bailout being the largest and the worst giveaway since a corrupt Congress gave land grants to the railroad barons a century and a half ago.
A kleptocracy.
A kleptocracy.
You know,
that's his other article. A kleptocracy.
He's interviewed in my film, In Debt We Trust, and he talks about how we're moving in a sense, from capitalism to serfdom, back to serfdom for a lot of people because they're in debt servitude. They owe so much money. They're in constant, under so much anxiety and pressure. It's very hard for them to even enjoy their lives.
Oh, absolutely. Let me read this to listeners, too, in his latest article. He says, what's going on now is not industrial capitalism. It's asset stripping. And he says the only analogy, I mean, the closest analogy he can think of would be to give the mafia free rein to start a new crime. He's talking about the bailout now. To give the mafia free rein to start a new crime wave in the taxpayer's interest to raise enough money to pay its fines to the Justice Department. And then he says, imagine how a world would look if the economy had been turned over to Al Capone as the head political capo, and to the financial guy for the mafia way back, and to Maya Lansky as the Treasury Secretary, and the pyramid schema, Carlo Ponzi, we all know about Ponzi schemes, as heading the Federal Reserve, and Willie Sutton, we all know who Willie Sutton was, as the Attorney General.
Right. Well, Willie Sutton said he robs banks because that's where the money is. So actually, the money is not always there. It's a fractional banking system. They don't have to have all their money there. Most of it's out working for them. And in fact, there's a whole question of how safe our deposits are, because the FDIC, which insures deposits up to $100,000, only has enough money, about $50 billion. And if there are 1,000 banks that are about to go down, this could be, you know, a whole lot, you know, they just don't have the money. So that's another bailout to come, to recapitalize the FDIC. So, you know, this thing is just really starting right now. I'm on my way to Wall Street, which I really think should be renamed the crime scene, you know, with that yellow tape around it, because what we have here are white-collar criminals, basically, not just financiers.
Oh, absolutely, Danny. And these people are literally given a license to steal. And then the bailout is a reward for their crimes. And the people who are hurt, you, me, the taxpayers, we're the ones who have to pay for it.
Well, it was instructive over the weekend, the Democrats, who basically will go along with this whole bailout because they don't have an alternative. They haven't really thought about it too much for some reason. You know, they basically said to Paulson, look, can't we extend this a little bit and include homeowners who are distressed? And put the homeowners into the rescue plan. Can't we just make sure, for example, there isn't excessive executive compensation so that people who get bailed out get their 60 you know, million-dollar payoff. And Paulson's response to this was no. No, I don't want to change it at all. In fact, you know, the only way we have to keep it simple, and I'm in charge, and that's it, and I'm not responsible or responsive to anyone or accountable to anyone. So here we have a situation where, you know, we have a monarch running things. And the you know, troubling thing a little bit is that Obama, in the New York Times today, it suggested that he may just want to keep Paulson as the Treasury Secretary if he is elected. So that's not too encouraging.
Oh, it's not encouraging.
Any new initiatives here?
It's incredible. Well, of course, we have a bipartisan criminal enterprise running the country. What Gore Vidal calls the money party or the property party with two wings. There really is so little difference between them. It's going to continue, Danny. My feeling is they're going to come up with some fictitious package for beleaguered homeowners and taxpayers, and it's going to be some kind of a fig leaf to make it look like the bailout of the bankers isn't quite as bad as some people are saying it is. But they'll end up doing next to nothing. They're not going to bail out people who are losing their homes. They're not going to do it.
See, one of the things they could do to keep people in their homes actually doesn't necessarily need government money. It's basically called loan modification, to get the lenders and the banks to modify the terms of the loan, to turn adjustable loans into fixed rates, and to cut the interest rate. Now, of course, the bank has to eat that, but it's better for the bank to have somebody in the house than have nobody in the house, because if they foreclose, not only is that expensive, but criminals can move in and strip the assets and the like. So in a way, there is a solution here. They've just been resisting it. You know, you can modify these loans and stop the foreclosure of homes.
Oh, I agree with you. And they can also extend them out. They can simply pass a law that anybody really trapped by this terrible debacle going on will not be forced out of their homes. They can live in their homes, simply delay the repayment of the debt, or as you say, just restructure the debt, lower interest rates.
That's exactly right. And this is why it seems to me that for the progressive community right now, we need to have fighting for an economic bill of rights. We need to be fighting for debt relief as a central component. I was on the radio yesterday with Dr. Nouriel Roubini, who's the leading economist on this, who's been the most accurate person, you know, on this whole thing. NYU economist is talking about how serious this is and how it's going to get worse. He's saying debt relief is the key, and that is something that can be done, but there's no political will to do it right now. That's why we have to make this issue a real issue. That's why Jesse Jackson is having this press conference. Whether he is the person who can put this coalition together, I don't know, remains to be seen. He's had a lot of his own problems of late. But I think this is the issue that needs to be talked about. And unfortunately, you know, the progressive community is just not focusing on economic issues. And this is where the pain is in our society.
I think the only way really, the only chance to really help beleaguered people would be if enough people felt enough pain and they literally went out in the streets and scared the people in power. You gotta scare them to do something, Danny, otherwise.
I agree with that. And you know, it's interesting. Last week, Army Time, a newspaper that covers the United States Army, like their trade magazine, came out with a story saying a whole unit is being transferred from Iraq back to the United States to be ready for civil disturbances. The government is anticipating a violent response by the people, because when people start losing their mortgages, their homes, and then their welfare payments, and then other government assistance, these people are going to be more than mad. They're going to be, you know, active, and there's going to be an increase in crime and an increase in violence. I think you have to predict that, and this is what the government is now trying to prepare for with the contingency. I believe that the whole repressive approach in St. Paul was actually an approach to train police in tactics for the civil disturbances to come.
Oh, absolutely. St. Paul, Minneapolis, New Orleans after Katrina.
And there's another aspect to this that most people are not talking about. You know, if people are being foreclosed upon, their home is where they've done their voting registration. If you lose your home, you could lose your right to vote. You're not going to be registered. You're not going to have a place to be registered from. And this is something the Republicans are already challenging, the voter registrations of people who have lost their homes. It's a practice called caging. And the Democratic Party is suing in Michigan against this practice.
Oh, Danny, I wrote about it. This is sending a letter to somebody, having them respond. These people who may be living, who have a residence, and they get a letter, but they may be off in the military, they may be away at school, they may not be at their residence, and if they don't respond by a certain date, they wipe off the voter rolls.
Well, this is what the strategy is, to decrease the potential votes for Democrats. And, you know, this is very serious. Unfortunately, the Democratic Party, as usual, waking up to this very late, and is finally resolving to do something about it, but in a very limited way.
Danny, we hear that music coming. We got to take another break. Let's do that, and then come back.
This is radio from...
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Danny, you cover so much important material, information in your book, and to me a very key part of it is the media, the dominant media complicity in this terrible crime that they literally papered over and understated, simply didn't tell people what was going on, that everything was really fine, this is just a temporary thing we're going through, we'll get out of this, things will be better in no time. Until it finally exploded and nobody could avoid talking about it. But to me, this makes them a co-conspirator in the whole scheme.
Absolutely. I try to understand why. One of the things I discovered was in the dot-com era, the media was getting a tremendous amount of advertising money from all kinds of websites and web companies. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, when that crash happened, suddenly the advertising went away, and suddenly it was replaced by ads for credit card companies and mortgage lenders starting in 2002. So at the very time that the whole, subprime lending boom began, the media was actually selling, promoting these kind of dodgy ads. So they were actually profiting from all of this. And so if they're getting all this money for advertising, they're not going to spend a lot of money on, exposing their advertisers. And it's and that's one of the problems. There's a big conflict of interest in determining, this. And that's why, I feel like this is, this is something that media is definitely complicit in. But not just because they missed the story, but because they had an economic interest not to do the story.
Oh, very definitely.
That makes it even worse,
Of course,
more damning.
These are giant corporations.
Just give me one second here. One second. Yep. Talk for a second. I'll be right with you.
get my man in motion. I meant to tell Danny that I wish I could
here
be
I
with
am.
Him. Danny, I wish I could be with you going down to Wall Street to be part of this.
Yeah, crazy. I'm now at City Hall.
You're at City Hall. you're approaching.
I'm using the people's transportation system. I'm on a bus. I had to move my chair several times because there were people, Chinese people, who were very loud, who very loudly were talking about, about whatever they're talking about. So anyway, here I am now.
You're
not far from Wall Street.
You're approaching the crime scene.
On my crusade. about people, broadcasting with and from the people. That's what I'm doing here.
You know, so much goes through my mind as this thing is unfolding. And a few moments ago, we talked about the possibility of people being so upset and angry that there could be some revolutionary rumblings going on. So they bring the troops back. That I don't know how you deploy the troops on the streets. We have a lot of streets in the country to deploy them on, Danny.
Well, you know, this is not unprecedented. There was the Bonus Army.
Oh, yeah.
That marched on Washington, veterans who were promised some assistance and never got it. They marched. They turned out, you know, the army was mobilized to stop them. I mean, this is not without historical precedent of, breaking up strikes and all the rest of it.
Oh,
but,
absolutely.
You know, we haven't seen this kind of violence, police violence, in a while. We saw it. What we saw in St. Paul, I believe, is the opening shot here. Of training exercise to try to prepare people for this contingency, and I think that we're in a very dangerous period because the system is really on the edge of collapse. I mean, one of the ironies of this is it seems as if capitalists are turning to socialism to save capitalism. Meanwhile, in China, the communists are turning to capitalism to save socialism.
It's unbelievable,
so
Danny.
It's a bizarre twist of, of fate here. And, the China Investment Corporation is buying into, I think, one of the big banks, I think Morgan Stanley.
I just saw that today.
You're going to find a lot of this has to do with the foreign, we've heard a lot of talk about, we don't want foreign oil, we're dependent on foreign oil. But nobody has complained about foreign money, okay? Foreign money has been what's keeping this economy going. And once you turn that tap off, you're in serious trouble. And the New York Times reported last week that many Asians are now saying they don't trust American banks. They don't want their money in there. There's a big line of people in Singapore taking money out of AIG, the big insurer.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is something that, is growing in seriousness. If we lose these investors, the sovereign wealth funds in Singapore and the Middle East say they don't want to invest in American financial institutions anymore. So they'll buy U.S. treasuries, but they won't buy into these companies because they feel there's not been enough regulation, accountability, oversight, transparency, et cetera, and so forth. So in a way, the banks got what they wanted. They wanted an unregulated environment, and then they proceeded to eat each other alive. And eat the people along with them. And the consequence of all this is that the situation has grown worse for them. So it's like one of the contradictions here. What goes around comes around, and it's come around for a lot of big financial institutions. And the question is, what can anybody do about this? The Democrats seem being bamboozled. This is what Naomi Klein wrote about the shock, crisis, where they basically tell the Congress last Thursday, there's a meltdown that's coming that could be the worst thing in the world, and we have to act immediately. Let us handle it. Don't worry about it. Just give us $800 billion.
Danny, let's...
$800 billion. And that's the problem.
Let's take a break, and we'll come right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Get Danny Schechter on. We're talking about his new book, Plunder, the subprime crisis going on, all of these events. I mean, they're happening so fast, Danny, that we could start the program and we would know the latest. And at the end of the program, there'd be new things that happened during our hour, and we haven't found out about them yet.
Well, that's one of the problems with the reporting, is that the reporting is like, a fireman. They're going from one fire to the next. One story to the next, and not really connecting the dots and giving us the larger take on what's really happening. Who's winning, who's losing, what it means for us. So a lot of the business news is really news for people in business, not news for the people, so to speak.
Oh, very definitely. And I have a lot of feelings about what's happening. I absolutely believe that these kinds of crises are manufactured for profit. These people make money when things are going up or when they're going down. But this time, they were too smart by half. They simply went too far. The greed was too great. They went too far, and they are really getting hurt. In Michael Hudson's newest article up today in Global Research, he talks about a $46 trillion debt bomb. And Ellen Brown, who does some wonderful work, and her articles are also on Global Research, she covers this topic as well. If you can imagine this, I mean, I read this, and I had to read it three times. I can't even conceive of this. She talks about a quadrillion, that's $1,000 trillion, a quadrillion dollar derivatives bubble.
Now, yeah, I have a section in my book about quadrillion, introducing readers to that notion. It's becoming beyond absurd, but on the other hand, the scale of this problem is real. It's not, these people were allowed to get away with wrecking the entire economy. They wrecked themselves in the process. That's what's interesting about this. This is not, on the other hand, they're in a better position to try to recover whatever they can than many people who took out loans from, various mortgage brokers who are no longer in business and are trapped in homes that are unaffordable. Every day they're dealing with this question. Do I heat or do I eat? This is, a difficult reality. We have a very cold winter here in terms of the increase in natural gas prices and energy costs. You're going to have people who literally will go without eating and start, chopping up their houses to put something into the fireplace to keep warm. I mean, this is something that is unbelievable. In Santa Barbara, California, there's a parking lot. The people go into the parking lot at 11 o'clock at night and leave at 6 in the morning, people sleeping in their cars, whole families. And the reason they're doing it is because they're secure, and they're nervous about parking in the street where they could get attacked by people. So we're getting into this situation, which is, anarchy and insanity. They're also, because of foreclosures, the tax base is going to shrink in a lot of cities, and we're beginning to find a wave of cutbacks that are going to affect everybody as well. So, I was speaking to the president of a women's college out in the Bay Area. She said that a number of her students' parents have lost their homes to foreclosure. They can't afford to stay in school anymore. This is something that will ripple through the whole economy. People in Manhattan thought, this can't happen here, Now the New York Times had a big story about foreclosures all across Manhattan. There are foreclosures in the Hamptons, which is, the rich summer community, because a lot of jobs are being lost on Wall Street, thousands and thousands of jobs. And that, threw off money that helped fund charities, helped fund arts and museums in New York. There's going to be cutbacks there as well. Libraries will close and other, schools will be cut back. This is something that is going to have a devastating effect on our society. And add into this the cost of the war in Iraq, cost of the war in Afghanistan, and you're facing a continuing calamity.
This is a calamity that's unprecedented. It may be just beginning. The reality just emerged in recent months. Nobody has any idea whether they can contain this, what will or won't work.
I just spoke to a group of senior citizens. I started out by saying, how many of you have experienced a depression? A whole lot of hands went up, okay? And I said, how many of you want another depression? No hands went up. Because they know what that's like. That's a horrible, that's people really living on the edge. And, we could be moving in that direction very soon.
Oh, we very definitely can. I was born in 1934, Danny. I really have no recollection of the pain that people felt. I think the earliest recollection that I had of the Depression was when I began kindergarten, just around the time World War II began, when Hitler invaded Poland in 1939. But whatever problems my family was having financially, they sure kept it from me. I didn't have a clue. Things seemed very normal to me. And potentially now we have a situation that if it really gets totally out of control, it could make the 1930s seem very tame.
In the 1930s, Franklin Roosevelt spoke about banksters. That's what he called the people running banks, as if they were gangsters.
Oh, exactly.
And a lot of legislation was passed to try to make sure this kind of thing couldn't happen again. The Glass-Steagall Act, for one thing. And measure by measure, Republican lobbying and pressure managed to erode all of this. The bankruptcy reform bill, which was passed in just a few years ago, with bipartisan support. You know, Senator Biden was for it. You know, all of these measures have weakened regulation and weakened protection for ordinary people. And that's why if we want to deal with this situation, we've got to educate ourselves. We've got to go to websites like Global Research. We have to go to websites like MediaChannel.org and read books like Plunder and many other fine work and films like In Debt We Trust. We have to try to create, and what I'm proposing now, maybe Global Research wants to be part of it, but I think we need a new teach-in movement to really teach about the economic crisis for people who have grown up, you know, watching Jon Stewart, watching, YouTube, and they're not really very, very well versed in what's actually happening.
Danny, I tell people that we need to do exactly what you're saying now, not so much to be informed, but in our own self-interest, our own self-defense, because if we don't do these things, it's not going to be handed to us. The dominant powers, the dominant media, they're going to keep us in the dark. They're going to make us think, I just can't imagine how anybody buys this stuff anymore, but they're going to try to make us think that our government is really working to help us, to get us out of this, and that the big bank is really not all that bad. You know, they just, they got in trouble, and now we need to fix this thing to keep the economy on its feet, to keep people in jobs. People have no idea. Even if they have some idea, they simply don't realize that the power structure of the country is a criminal class, and they're the ones causing all the grief for us. And if we don't do something in our own self-defense, then they're simply going to let us go down, and they're not going to worry about us unless we scream and holler and stamp our feet and bang our fist. They won't do any more than we demand that they do for us.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this kind of contemptuous attitude just on Sunday, just yesterday, when Henry Paulson, you know, was asked about the Democratic concerns about extending the rescue provisions for homeowners at risk. And he just said, no, I'm not going to do it, period. So there's just so much insensitivity, arrogance, a lack of caring about how people are suffering about all of this. And that's why, you know, we have to make these concerns, the issues, we have to put them on the agenda. We have to fight for what we believe in. And I believe we need a program for an economic bill of rights. We need a program that stresses the need for debt relief. And we need to try to find ways of bringing together affected constituencies, students who are suffering from student loans, everybody who's experiencing credit card, usury, and also people who are facing foreclosure. There needs to be solidarity with these people and some support, because, of course, the media is saying, Paulson said, well, this has happened because of the irresponsibility of the borrowers and the lenders, as if they're the same thing.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and so there's been no attempt to really look critically at this, and you can't compare somebody who got into a bad mortgage because they were hustled into it with a big institution that's profiting off of that mortgage. They're not the same thing. And that's why this issue has to be brought for, you know, front and center if possible.
Oh, absolutely. It's the old blame the victim game. Danny, people don't know the history of this country. When Roosevelt ran for election the first time in 1932, his platform was not a lot different than Herbert Hoover's. He was a patrician. He represented the system. But he was also smart enough after he was elected and in office to realize that things were serious and getting worse, and he also had around him at least a few concerned business leaders who came to the realization that they had to give up a little to save a lot, to save capitalism. And the whole genesis of the New Deal was that these people were scared that the system was going down at that time. And they had very, very vivid memories of the Russian Revolution in 1917 that brought down the Tsar and the extreme right-wingism or fascism that he represented. And they were worried that the same thing could happen here. Today,
remember one other thing is that the New Deal measures made some improvement, but the system began to collapse again a second time. And it was only the war, you know, Dr. Win the War, basically was responsible for getting us out of the Depression. It was all the government spending on military, production.
Absolutely.
And this is what I'm afraid of is, you know, when a society goes into economic decline, there's a blame game that takes place. The people who are responsible don't want to blame themselves, and they start pointing the finger at others. And, you know, we're in a very precarious world situation right now. You know, the loss of the war in Iraq, the loss of the war in Afghanistan is going to come back to haunt us. And there's going to be, the right-wing fascistic movements in this country are gonna use these issues. You know, we see this already. It's only like Ron Paul who's been talking about all of this. But there's a lot of people on the right, the libertarian side of things. Some of them have very good ideas, but there's also a danger here of demagoguery, you know, to convert this issue into something that can be used to rally people for war. And I worry about that.
Oh, I worry that they may want to use increased war, another war, to distract people from the economic crisis at home. And the only way you could do that is to create a villain that is so dangerous that we have to go to war to attack them. It's hard to believe that they could do that after what we've been through.
Saddam
was a poster child. He was a room service despot, Danny.
And Putin, you know, Putin gave an interview to CNN suggesting that, you know, the whole thing with Georgia was really time for the American election. They seem to have screwed it up, though, in the way they bought, did it. But, you know, it was to provoke the Russians to come in and have a new boogeyman. And the problem with this is that he gave an interview saying all this. CNN didn't even run the interview with the head of, with the prime minister of Russia. So, you know, the information we're getting is so selective that it's not surprising that people don't fully understand what's happening. You can't blame the people. We have to make every attempt we can to reach people. And I'm trying to do it with this book, Plunder. I'm trying to do it with my film, In Debt We Trust. I'm articles on global research and on other websites to try to get the word out as best I can. You know, I work, unlike a lot of other people of your ilk, Stephen, I'm only joking, you know, I work in mainstream media. I work for ABC News. I work for CNBC. I work for CNN. I was there, okay? I had my ID spot badge, okay? And so I worked on the inside. And yet I can't seem to get, you know, interviewed by any of these major outlets yet. Perhaps it'll happen, but it's been a big uphill battle to try to get on the air to talk about any of this stuff.
Oh, Danny, you were there. You know how they operate. You know the people. In a way, you and I are alike. I have no media background, but I'm a product of the Wharton School. I can imagine what would happen to me if I showed up at a reunion. They might bar me from coming in.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I was a Nieman Fellow at Harvard. I took a class at the Harvard Business School. You know, I've been to Davos, the big World Economic Forum. You know, I've had some, you know, interaction with the CEOs and the big boys of the, you know, business media and the business elite. you know, so I'm, you know, I know about it up close and personal. You know, so what I try to do in my book is add a personal perspective about how I got into these issues and why I felt they were important. You're usually not supposed to do that if you're a, quote, real journalist or a real academic, not to integrate any subjective narrative into what you're doing. But I think that enriches the story, and I can recount incidents and people I interviewed, places I was, that I think would make this more interesting for people as a good read. That's what I've tried to do with Plunder.
Well, you did a hell of a job, Danny. You did a hell of a job. My hat's off to you for what you did, and it's important.
And I must say, it's a tribute to global research that a lot of websites have picked up your review that you did. You know, you wrote such a comprehensive review. I was afraid nobody would want to read the book.
Oh, don't do,
you were so thorough. But I think it's a very good, digest of what's in the book, and I hope that people will read it for themselves and encourage others to read it. You know, I'm up against the battle on that front, too. You know, something like 32 publishers turned down the book, even though it was offered by a top literary agent, you know, because they didn't think the problem I was describing was serious. That's how out of touch they are, okay? The book Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins was also turned down by 28 publishers, he told me. You know, it's an uphill battle to tell the truth. It's an uphill fight.
It always is, Danny. They don't want to let the ugly truths out. They want to keep feeding us the snake oil and hide the real bad stuff. Let's take a break and we'll come back and finish up the hour.
Thank you.
To the news hour. Danny, we've got a few minutes left. We both get lots of emails with stuff, good stuff that we want people to send us. I got an email from the Center for Economic and Policy Research. It's too long to go through, but they cover some what they call principles to guide the bailout, and they cover stuff like the bankers should be forced to eat the bulk of their losses. Only give them what's necessary to keep the whole system from imploding. It should minimize the opportunity for gaming. It should minimize moral hazard. Like you said, it should let delinquent mortgage holders stay in their homes, pay what they're able to pay in the form of rent, but don't dispossess them. It should restrict the executive compensation.
We're talking about a moral, not just a hazard, a moral atrocity here. You know, and so many people have been hurt and will be hurt by it. That's why we need to try to reach out to the American people in Canada as well, and get them, you know, engaged in this conversation about what's happening and how we can make a difference and have some impact. Unless there are people in the streets, unless there's noise, it's not the ship that makes the wave, it's the motion on the ocean. We've got to get some motion going on the ocean of public opinion. If we're going to have an impact, you know, I would just say to people who are interested, I'd just like to tell, if I can offer a couple of websites that they can check out. There's newsdissector.com/plunder with a capital P. More information about my book published by Cosimo. It's available on Amazon.com. The website I blog for is mediachannel.org. We're facing an incredible crisis right now. We may not be around after October 15th if we don't raise some more money. We're facing one of our partners pulled out because they're having a financial distress. So, you know, here we are dealing with this disaster and financial crisis, so we're having a financial crisis. Also, my email is dissector, D-I-S-S-E-C-T-O-R, at mediachannel.org. If anyone wants to write to me directly, I will respond. So, you know, that's some ways to get in touch and to be in touch with what I'm writing and what I'm doing. And, of course, I'm really happy that Global Research is picking up some of my pieces now. I really am impressed with what they've been able to do, not just in English but in French as well, getting out a point of view that really needs to be heard. How many people read Global Research?
Oh, the readership has been growing a great deal. Michelle Chosedowski, my co-host and editor, he told me that he is matching some of the most popular websites.
So there you are. There is an opportunity here to read. You know, we do have through the web, at least when we, as long as that continues, we have access to a lot of information, and we have to try to use that access. We have to defend, you know, the internet and an open web infrastructure so that all voices can be heard, because they've already been driven out of television and radio for the most part. So, you know, this is a battle, too, the fight for media access, media exposure, and getting our voices heard, getting to publish books like Plunder, getting to make films like In Debt We Trust. It's not easy. It takes time and effort, and sometimes, you know, you're doing it, you end up not making anything, you know. I mean, so you're doing it because you're passionate about the issues, you care, you want to make a difference, you want to make change. But, you know, it often comes at a price to all of us who are involved in this. That's why people who are listening ought to try to think about ways you can be supportive to independent media and help this continue.
Absolutely, Danny, and I think the fate of the Republic is on the line, too. And if anybody thinks that's a light statement, we're hanging by a thread, and some people call what's going on a coup d'etat. Danny, that music says they're going to cut us off, but I want to thank you for coming on.
We've
got to do this again.
I hope so. I really would like to meet you someday when I'm not on a bus.
Okay. I feel exactly the same way. I consider you a close friend now, even though we've never met.